ACATRA Foundation presents the ACATRA Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of ACATRA AI.
Oh, welcome. Today we're diving deep into, well, truly one of the most improbable and consequential lives of the 20th century. We're drawing heavily from Ezra Vogel's definitive biography, Deng Xiaoping, and the transformation of China.
It's a fantastic resource.
It really is. And here's the puzzle, the central paradox we want to explore. How does a man, barely 5 feet tall, who gets purged not once but twice by his own Communist Party,
and humiliated quite publicly,
utterly humiliated, how does he come back in his 70s, no less, to not just lead China, but fundamentally reshape the destiny of, well, a billion people?
It's an incredible story of, I think, political resilience, but also intellectual flexibility. Deng Xiaoping was China's paramount leader from around 1978 to 1989.
And really, the architect of modern China title fits, doesn't it?
Yeah, it absolutely does. Vogel really shows us that Deng was just full of contradictions.
Yeah.
I mean, here's a lifelong fervent communist who then unleashes market forces, private enterprise, on a scale nobody had ever seen before. It's quite something.
He somehow managed this impossible trick, almost, keeping the political system totally rigid while setting the economic system free.
Yeah, radically free.
And for you listening, maybe the core idea, the philosophy that kind of underpins this whole story is summed up in that famous saying of his.
Ah, the cat quote.
Exactly. It doesn't matter if a cat is black or white, as long as it catches mice.
And, you know, that statement seems simple, but it was basically pragmatism above everything else. It's like a strategic bomb, really.
Yeah.
Dropped right into the middle of all that rigid ideological fighting at the time.
So how did he get there? How did a dedicated revolutionary end up valuing results, practical results, over doctrine? That's what we need to unpack.
Let's do it.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning, his beginnings. He was born Deng Xiansheng in Sichuan province back in 1904.
Right. And his father, he was a landowner, but maybe modest by some standards. The key thing, though, was he was progressive. He valued modern education for Deng.
Not the classical Confucian route.
Exactly. And that background, I think it's really crucial because it explains his motivation. Deng was part of that generation, you know, deeply scarred by what they called the century of humiliation.
And foreign powers were carving up China.
Precisely. So his deepest impulse, maybe even before any Marxist theory, was this burning desire to restore China's strength, its dignity, its sovereignty.
And it's that drive, that need to make China strong, that sends him off to France in 1920. He's only 16, on a work-study program.
Yeah, and this wasn't some, you know, cushy academic trip. He worked terrible hours in factories.
Mm-hmm.
Renault, I think.
Yeah, grueling work.
Yeah.
Barely getting by.
And that experience, the harsh reality of labor, plus meeting people like Zhu Enlai, who'd become a lifelong ally, it sharpened his politics.
So he saw communism then.
He concluded, as Vogel puts it, that communism offered the only clear, powerful doctrine that could actually achieve that national rejuvenation he craved.
Okay, so France gives him the revolutionary fire, maybe?
And then his time training in the Soviet Union in 1926, that gives him the discipline, the mechanics of the party.
Right. He wasn't known as a big talker, was he? More the organizer.
Exactly. Not the charismatic type, but the indispensable organizational guy.
Mm-hmm.
He understood the Leninist party structure, how to make things happen. Competence was his calling card.
And his early career, I mean, it was trial by fire, wasn't it? He was a veteran of the Long March.
An incredible ordeal in itself.
And spent decades in really dangerous clandestine party work. Later, managing the Lu Deng army, he got this reputation for just being supremely competent, efficient, logistics execution, not grand theories.
And that focus on just getting things done, ironically, is what put him on a collision course with Mao later. Well, his shift towards pure pragmatism really solidifies after Mao's, frankly, catastrophic policies. The Great Leap Forward, specifically.
The famine.
The resulting famine, yes. Millions died. And while others were maybe sticking to the ideological line, Deng argued forcefully for practical solutions. Things like allowing household farming plots just to get food production going again.
And that's when he supposedly first uttered the cat quote.
That's the context, yes. Black cat, white cat. He was publicly saying, essentially, let's focus on survival, on results, not rigid doctrine right now.
Which, in that
climate, was incredibly risky. It put him directly against Mao's radicalism.
And that leads us right into the, well, the crucible moment, really, the Cultural Revolution. This is central to understanding him, isn't it?
Absolutely crucial. He gets branded the number two capitalist rotor, publicly purged, stripped of everything.
Sent into exile, working in a tractor factory in Jiangxi province, just a common laborer.
For years. And it wasn't just political suffering, it was deeply personal. His eldest son, Deng Pufeng, he was persecuted by Red Guards. Thrown from a window, was it?
Yes, and became permanently disabled. Imagine the impact of that.
It must have been immense. That kind of trauma, that personal loss, alongside the political humiliation, it absolutely hardened his views on the dangers of ideological chaos.
It's just astonishing, then, that someone who goes through that level of betrayal and suffering doesn't just survive, but comes back.
Comes back stronger, arguably.
Yeah.
After Mao died, Deng returned. First briefly, then permanently in 1977. He was 73.
73. And he moves with, well, incredible speed and skill. Outmaneuvers Mao's chosen successor, Hua Gufeng.
Definitely done. He consolidated power remarkably quickly.
And then comes the launch pad moment. The third plenum, December 1978.
This wasn't just a reshuffle. This was the big one. This meeting officially changed the CCP's primary goal. They formally shifted focus away from constant class struggle,
which had torn the country apart,
to economic development. That was the new mandate. And this decision, it just unleashed everything. Decollectivization in the countryside, welcoming foreign investment, setting up those special economic zones, the SEZ.
And the results, I mean, the legacy is just staggering. Lifting, what, 800 million people out of poverty?
An unprecedented achievement in human history. Plus, creating the model for the socialist market economy, which is still debated today, and negotiating the one country, two systems framework for Hong Kong.
So if we try to boil down his core philosophy, his worldview, what are the key elements?
I think there are two main driving forces. The first, as we've discussed, is just sheer pragmatism. His famous phrase, seek truth from facts.
Which sounds simple, but...
But it meant the only real test of any policy was its practical outcome. Did it work? Did it improve things in the real world? It was a profound rejection, really, of the kind of abstract dogma that had dominated China for decades.
So results on the ground trumped any political manifesto. That was his method. What was the second driving principle?
The second, and maybe even deeper motivator, was this visceral, lifelong fear of chaos. The Chinese word is Luan.
Right.
Having lived through the warlord era, the brutal civil war, and especially the absolute breakdown of society during the Cultural Revolution, Deng saw stability as the absolute bedrock, the prerequisite for any progress.
So that fear drove both the good and the bad, in a way.
You could argue that. It motivated his radical economic reforms because he believed prosperity would give people a stake in stability, make them less likely to cause trouble. But it also, in his mind, justified his ruthlessness when he felt stability was threatened.
And that fear of internal chaos, Luan, that also shaped how he saw China's place in the world.
Directly. That's where his famous foreign policy advice came from. Hide your strength, bide your time. Taoguang Yingui.
Don't pick fights. Don't challenge the global order yet.
Exactly. Focus internally first. Get strong. Because global confrontation, drawing too much attention, that risked creating the instability, the Luan, that he feared above all else. It was a very patient, very strategic view.
Okay, let's zoom in on three specific moments, three turning points that really altered his path and China's. The first one we've touched on heavily, the Cultural Revolution purge.
Right, those 7 years.
Yeah.
The humiliation, the forced labor, it was utterly transformative. It wasn't just punishment. It was... like a period of forced reflection.
Strategic clarity, called it.
Yes. That suffering convinced him, absolutely convinced him, that endless revolutionary struggle, ideological purity tests, that was a dead end for China. He used that time, amazingly, to refine his ideas for reform, not abandon them.
Incredible resilience. Okay, turning point number two, the third plenum of 1978. We mentioned it, but why was it so pivotal?
Because it was the official institutional break. By formally shifting the party's main goal away from class struggle to economic development, he essentially gave permission, bureaucratic permission, for the entire country, the entire system, to pursue wealth creation.
It changed everyone's job description, basically.
In a fundamental way. It changed the role of government, the role of the citizen. Mm. Everything started to reorient around the economy.
And the third turning point. This one feels like pure political theater. The Southern Tour in 1992.
Oh, absolutely. High drama. Deng is 87 years old by now, officially retired. But his reforms, they're stalling. Hardliners in Beijing are pushing back, especially after the crackdown in 1989.
Tiananmen.
Yes. So what does Deng do? He goes on this remarkable tour of the special economic zones in the south, Shenzhen, Zhuhai. places that were booming because of his policies.
And he wasn't quiet about it.
Not at all. He gave these powerful, unscripted speeches, basically saying, be bolder, go faster, don't be afraid. He was championing his vision, publicly challenging the conservatives back in the Capitol.
Using his immense personal prestige, his status as the last of the revolutionary elders.
Exactly. To break the political logjam, it was a masterful move. That tour reignited the engines of reform and growth, ensuring his economic project would continue long after he was gone.
We have to talk about Tiananmen Square in 89 more directly, though. It hangs over his legacy.
It absolutely does. And Vogel's analysis, which we need to stick to here, is clear. Deng authorized the crackdown.
Why? From his perspective.
From Deng's perspective, informed by that deep fear of Luan, the protest represented a fundamental threat to stability. He genuinely believed, according to Vogel, that if those protests spiraled out of control, like the Cultural Revolution,
which he'd experienced firsthand,
then the entire economic reform project, China's chance to regain its strength and status, would be lost. It would collapse back into chaos.
So for him, it was a terrible necessity, a choice between order, even brutal order, and national disintegration.
That seems to be the framework Vogel presents based on Deng's viewpoint. The trade-off was order at almost any cost to preserve the larger goal of national development. It's the ultimate and perhaps tragic contradiction of his time in power.
It certainly highlights that stark bargain he offered, didn't it? Economic freedom, unprecedented opportunity for hundreds of millions.
In exchange for absolute political control by the party. No challenges allowed.
When you look back at that incredibly long, incredibly turbulent life, what are some of the human lessons we can maybe take away? Things that resonate even today.
Well, for me, one is definitely resilience, but resilience as a conscious strategy. He faced political death 3 times, purged, exiled. Yet he never seemed to give in to bitterness or despair. He played the long game.
Waiting for his moment.
Waiting, reflecting, maintaining his self-belief. It shows how adversity, even terrible adversity, can actually be used to sharpen your thinking, to refine your vision, if you have that inner strength.
That's powerful. What else?
I think his method is fascinating, too. That crossing the river by feeling for stones approach.
Ah, yes, the experiments.
Exactly. Instead of some grand top-down master plan imposed all at once, he favored small-scale experiments, like the SEZs. Let's try this here in this limited area.
See what happens.
Yeah. If it fails, okay, the damage is contained. We learn from it. If it succeeds, great, let's study it, adapt it, and maybe apply it more broadly, maybe even nationally. It's actually a fantastic model for innovation, even in business today. Low risk, incremental, but potentially radical change.
That makes sense. A very pragmatic way to manage huge transformations.
And finally, I think the human lesson is about the sheer complexity, maybe the uncomfortable complexity, of leadership on that scale.
Yeah.
Here's a man Vogel portrays as devoted to his family, genuinely dedicated to lifting his nation.
But also utterly ruthless.
But also capable of dismissing trusted allies, people like Hu Yaobang and Zhao Ziyang, the moment their push for political reform seemed to threaten that core value of stability, and of course, authorizing Tiananmen.
It shows that pursuing a single transformative vision sometimes involves these incredibly difficult, maybe even morally compromising choices.
It certainly suggests that in his case, the vision of national strength and order trumped everything else.
Okay, it's time for our 3 final takeaways. Synthesized from Vogel's analysis and the sheer scale of what Deng achieved.
Let's hear them.
Okay. First, the emotional insight. I think it's about the strategic clarity that can be born from suffering. His ability to endure not just political exile, but profound personal tragedy like his son's injury. It wasn't just about survival. That pain seems to have forged his political will. It gave him a harder edge, maybe, but also a laser focus that enabled him to come back and push through world-changing reforms.
Resilience leading to resolve. Yeah, I see that.
Second, the intellectual insight. This has to be the triumph of pragmatism over ideology. More than anything, Deng taught China, and maybe the world, that the most vital question isn't, is this policy ideologically pure, but simply, does this policy work? Does it deliver results? That simple, almost utilitarian focus was the key, wasn't it? It unlocked China's potential.
Absolutely. Results over rhetoric.
And finally, the universal insight. This one is quite inspiring, actually. It's the power of a grand second act, even late in life. Think about it. Most people's major life contributions are made well before age 70. Deng's defining work, the launch of modern China as we know it, really began when he was 73.
An age when most are long retired.
Exactly. His story is powerful proof that it's never too late to pursue a massive world-altering vision.
A remarkable life, full of contradictions, but undeniably transformative. And that transformation he started, it's still reshaping our world today.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.